throw balls far. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Man, we got all kinds of stuff to talk about. NBA Finals Game 3 coming up tonight. Scene shifts down to the Metroplex in Dallas. Can the Mavs make this a series? Can Kyrie get going? What about Kristaps Porzingis' health? It's going to be a major factor moving forward. Who's going to win Game 3? U.S. Open preview from Pinehurst number 2. There are the USGA started moving this tournament around. You've seen a bunch of different places over the last couple of decades. Feels like that's shifting. There are now 3 what they call anchor sites. I'll tell you what that is. Do you like the idea of that? Well, what challenges does Pinehurst number 2 present to the golfers? We might be, depending on what happens this week, we may be headed for one of the greatest sports what-ifs in history. Who do you think are the favorites to win this week at Pinehurst? What winning score do you envision? Then we'll pick our top 3 plus a sleeper, and a sleeper just has to be outside of the top 25 in the official world golf ranking. So get that in your brain. Get that in your mind. Fire the text to 225-9698. We'll talk about the U.S. Open. And then we had the list yesterday of the most wins or the teams in college football that have won at least 200 games since the year 2000. I'm going to compare and contrast that list to one I saw yesterday, the most wins in the college football playoff era. How many teams are on both lists in the top 10, let's say? How many teams are in the top 10 of both lists? And where are some that maybe just fall outside of it? Who's dropped off? You can, a couple of these you can see, oh, yeah, they must have won those games early. They haven't been as good lately. And then who's come up in the college football playoff era versus maybe what they were for the entirety of the century so far. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. If you've got something else on your mind, feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app's got it all. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News. Brand new edition of that Penny News hit the website last night at midnight. Go check out the deals, thepennynews.com. Of course, we'll have the print edition of the Penny News circulating tonight. By tomorrow morning, pick up a free copy of the printed Penny News at your favorite local newsstand. Of course, Big Elk and Paragon TV in there as well during the high school sports season. Skinny on Sports podcast. If you miss our show entirely, you can find it anywhere podcasts drop. Hello, Jared. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. Got another walk in this morning. 2 miles today. Actually, it's not true. 1.99 miles. I figure it's 2.
You couldn't round it up to 2.
I didn't know what the mileage was. It's always on my wife's arm. She got her phone on this little deal. But I assumed that by the time I walked from our front door to the kitchen, back to the bedroom, surely that was 1/100 of a mile. So I'm going to go ahead and give myself 2 miles this morning.
Yeah.
Another gorgeous morning.
Yes, it was.
It's amazing how much prettier the grass looks when there's like dew or water, like if you watered it overnight or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's always amazing how much more green it looks until this afternoon when you go home and it's been 95 degrees. Doesn't look quite as pretty at night, but it was a gorgeous morning, an absolute gorgeous morning.
How are you? The sunrise was really pretty and everything. It was real nice. I'm good. We're good.
All right, so we talked about the list yesterday of the winningest college football programs. Basically, to be on the list, you had to have won 200 games since the year 2000. To refresh everybody's memory, Ohio State, Oklahoma, in order, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, Boise, Clemson, LSU, Oregon, USC, Wisconsin, Texas, Florida State, TCU, Michigan, Florida, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, and Utah. Excuse me. That was top 18. There was 18 programs that had won 200 games since 2000. Well, I found a list of who's won the most games since the college football playoff era. Because we discussed, you know, like Virginia Tech, for instance, was one that I was shocked that had won 200 games because they haven't been very good lately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people brought up Penn State, brought up Iowa, brought up Oklahoma State, who were just outside of that 200 range, but they've kind of been better lately than they were maybe at the first of the century. So, in the top 10, how many teams do you think are on both lists?
In the top 10, let's see. I'm kind of counting them up on my fingers in my head, not out loud. I'll say, let's go with five.
The guess is five. The answer is eight.
There's eight.
There's eight teams that find themselves with 200 wins since 2000 and also in the top 10 of wins since the college football playoff era. Want to try to name them?
Well, we'll go with the safe route with Alabama and Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma. So that's right. That was my five. So
there's five.
There's five. Notre Dame?
Notre Dame was not in the top 10 of the 200 wins list.
Oh, that's right.
They were not in the top 10.
That was one that we were kind of stumped about.
They were not in the top 10.
So not. What about Florida State?
Florida State's not in the top 10. Mm. They dropped off because, you know, they were what? They won the title the year before the playoff started.
Right.
But then they made it to the playoff the first year.
They did. How about Oregon?
Oregon is one of those. They're tied for eighth, which is a three-way tie, which finishes out the top 10. 90 wins in the playoff era.
How about, this is kind of an offshoot one, but they've had a lot of success in the playoff era, Baylor?
Baylor was down a little bit.
Okay.
I've got the list right here. Baylor was 70. Now, here's the thing. You got to remember they had the Ofer. The Ofer really hurts them.
That's right. Kind of forget about
that. The Ofer and then Matt, what's his name era?
Rule?
Yeah, Matt Rule. They struggled there for just a little bit.
Okay, so we're on six here.
One of them I think is fairly obvious. One of them is going to be hard to get.
One is obvious and one's hard to get.
Yeah, one is one that you'd think of.
Michigan?
Michigan is not. Michigan was not in the top 10 on the 200s.
Yeah. We're gonna be here all day. I'm feeling pretty good, 6 out of 8.
The one I would think is fairly obvious that you could, LSU.
Oh, of course. Yes.
LSU with 90 down there with Oregon. The one that I think would have been kind of tough to get just because Dakota Boise was on the first list. They were tied for fourth with Georgia with 248 wins since 2000. They are not on the college football playoff era list. The other one is Wisconsin. Wisconsin with 90. So here's the top 10. Oh, okay. So there was eight that were on both lists. Boise drops off of the college football playoff era list, and USC drops off of the college football playoff list from the other one. You named the two that replaced them. Notre Dame and Michigan. Notre Dame and Michigan tied for sixth on the college football playoff era with 95 wins apiece. I think that Michigan was the one that is, I mean, they've had the last 3 years. But over a 10-year span, I think what I see here is, you know what? Harbaugh was a lot better than people thought he was at the first of his career. But he couldn't beat Ohio State. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it, he was racking up a bunch of wins. He just couldn't beat Ohio State to claim a Big Ten title. Now he's done it three in a row. And really, the only hiccup year that he's honestly had was COVID. You know, that was an awful year for them, what, 2-5 or whatever in the seven game they played.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is, Harbaugh was a lot better, I think, at the first of his tenure than people let on just because of that one game and the losses that he took at the end of the year. Notre Dame, not surprising. They've been in the playoff, what, 3 or 4 times?
Yeah.
You know, so that's they were down toward the bottom, if I remember right. Well, I've got it right here. Yeah, they were 202. So they were the 17th out of the 18 that had won 200 since 2000. And now they've vaulted up to a tie for 6th over the past 10 years. So they've definitely – Notre Dame's more of an uptick. We'll see if Marcus Freeman can continue that. I think Brian Kelly is a big part of that, obviously, in that era. So as far as the college football playoff list, no surprise, Bama won after being 3 in the 2000s. Clemson is number 2 after being 6th since 2000. Ohio State drops from 1st to 3rd. Georgia stays right at number 4. Oklahoma drops from 2nd to 5th. And those are the 5 teams with over 100 wins in the last 10 years. Then Michigan, Notre Dame, both at 95, tied for 6th. Wisconsin, Oregon, LSU, tied for 8th at 90. Then, number 11 on that list, Oklahoma State. Mm. You know, a lot of people were surprised that they hadn't won 200 games in the 2000s. They were what? You count at 197? I think it's what they were.
Yeah,
three short.
Yeah.
They were very, very close. Well, here they are, number 11. So, on that other list, at 197, they were no better than 19th or 20th. Now they jump all the way up to 11th since the college football playoff era has begun over the last 10 years. So they're almost averaging 9 wins a year, which would have put you inside that 200 or more than 200 on that first list. Some other names people mentioned yesterday, Penn State, Iowa, mm-hmm. a win behind OSU at 88. And then a name that nobody even mentioned yesterday. And for good reason, if you think back all the way, but I wondered if we might hear this name yesterday just because of last year and some of the success they've had recently. Washington. Washington with 87 wins in the college football playoff era. But no one, I honestly wouldn't have thought of them in the 200 either. But it's kind of giving a compare and contrast as far as those two lists, more kind of Johnny Come Latelys versus the teams that have been really good for the last 25 years versus 10. And that was an interesting comparison of some of the teams that maybe dropped off and some that had come up. You know who wasn't even close?
On this playoff list?
On this playoff list?
No, who?
Texas.
Well, listen, no disrespect, Texas, but you just haven't
know
been
it,
good
right?
in the playoff era. They had really good seasons in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously winning the title, what, 05?
Well, and here's the thing. We talked about it last year as they were in the conversation for one of those playoff spots. That's literally the first time that's ever happened, right?
Yes.
They had never really been involved once the poll came out, at least. You know, it's when that first poll comes out in what? End of October, early November? For like the last 6 weeks or so of the regular season, maybe 5 weeks. Until last year, the Horns had never even been a thought. And matter of fact, I think if I remember right, it was only the second time they'd ever even been ranked in the top 25 of the damn thing.
Yeah.
And so it comes as no surprise if you've been paying attention, but it's shocking all at the same time. You know, yesterday I heard Jim bring up the same list. He made the point that we didn't even make. When you look at this, I mean, if you ask people around the country, Texas and Oklahoma, I think a lot of people might say, oh, yeah, well, Texas is, you know, the superior program. Oklahoma has 42 more wins since 2000 than Texas. 42. In the college, how many do you think that is in the college football playoff era?
How many of those wins?
Like how many more does OU have in the college football playoff era than Texas? They had 42 in the 2000s. Obviously, that number is going to be smaller.
29. Wow.
102-73.
Wow.
Here's some teams that are ahead of Texas in this, just to illustrate the point even more. Here's some teams that are, that have more wins than the Horns. TCU, which they were really close to them. They were only three behind them in the 2000s. Okay. Cincinnati, Central Florida, North Carolina State, Brigham Young, Kansas State, Houston, Minnesota, and the dagger to their hearts, Texas A&M. Who do you think has the least amount of wins in the college football playoff era in the Power Five?
The least amount?
The least amount.
I immediately go to somebody like Rutgers or Kansas.
Okay, you've named two of the last three. Kansas is the worst with 29. Rutgers is third to worst at 40, and there's one school in between them.
Well, on the text line said Illinois.
Illinois is two spots ahead of Rutgers.
Okay.
You can think of it.
Is UConn is still a
no?
They're not a.
They're not. I don't know. They're not a Power Five anymore. You're gonna kick yourself.
Boston College, Georgia Tech.
Way worse than that.
Cal. Who is it?
Oh, you're gonna kick yourself. There it is. I got it texted. Vandy.
Of course.
And now, okay, so Kansas is worse with 29. Vandy with 36. Rutgers with 40. We had Illinois mentioned on the text line. They were 46, so they're fifth from worst. There's a team in between there, the fourth worst, which, yeah, but they're way more talked about than those others, maybe excluding Kansas because of Jalen Daniels. That's been that bad, but you would never know it by the hype that they've received over the last couple of years.
I don't know.
Colorado, 44, is the fourth worst team in the Power Five in the college football playoff era.
Yeah, you would never know it.
You'd never know it now. Like,
yeah.
Anyhow.
That's a great question we'll have to talk about, a topic we'll have to talk about as we get closer, is what happens if Colorado has another lackluster year in year two of the
Deion era.
The Deion era. Does this love affair with the media continue?
Oh, it will. We're one day away, Jared. One day away from a free concert, Picking in the Park at Ackley Park. It's tomorrow, 8 p.m. Cody Brewer, Cooper Twyman, JC Aquarius, Caroline Grace will be at Ackley Park. The Surf Bar will be there, presenting sponsors. Of course, KECO, the Tips Agency, Hutch's Gas, Edward Jones was Josh Thomas. And also today I figured out another one that's not on this list, but will be Moran Equipment as well.
Oh, great.
Kicking in for Picking in the Park tomorrow, 8 o'clock in Ackley Park. Free concert. Some great local musicians putting on a heck of a show at Ackley Park tonight. Tomorrow, 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Hanging out here on a pre-U.S. Open Wednesday morning. You know what would be a great place to go get you bite of lunch tomorrow, Thursday special tomorrow, and watch a little U.S. Open?
The same place I get my wings.
The Boomtown Grill.
That's it.
Boomtown, 2103 South Main, right here in Elk City. It's got everything. Steak, chicken, seafood, pizzas, pastas, burgers, sandwiches, wraps. If you're looking for a salad, they've got those as well. Grilled chicken or steak salad. Hand-cut fries, booming onion. All kinds of appetizers, large selection of basically anything you can think of. 12 big screen TVs, happy hour 2 to 6 on Monday through Friday. Those appetizer plates, those chicken nachos are phenomenal. And, of course, on Thursdays, 50-cent boneless chicken wing special. So tomorrow you can go enjoy the carnage that Pinehurst number two is going to throw at the most pampered players on earth and eat some 50-cent boneless chicken wings as you do it. Boomtown Grill, open 7 days a week. Let's see. 11 to 10 on Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. That is the Boomtown Grill. All right, U.S. Open coming up tomorrow through Sunday. It's the Father's Day weekend tradition from the USGA. So Pinehurst number two is the site this year. Pinehurst, of course, the legendary 1999 site of Payne Stewart's winning putt to beat Phil Mickelson by a shot. This will be the fourth time Pinehurst has hosted the U.S. Open. There was major renovations after the 2005 playing. So we've really sort of only seen this version of the golf course once, back in 2014 when Martin Kaymer blew away the field. But Pinehurst has become one of what the USGA is labeling anchor sites. So what does that mean? That means every fifth year, the U.S. Open is coming back to Pinehurst.
Hmm.
There's three of these anchor sites in rotation as we speak, and it's going to be the next three in a row that we see. You're talking about Pinehurst number two, Oakmont, and then also Pebble Beach. Do you like that idea?
Yeah, I do.
How come?
Well, you know, for me as a viewer, knowing what I'm seeing. Does that make sense? And being able to see, like Pebble Beach, for example, I enjoy watching and seeing Pebble Beach in that ambiance. It's pleasing for me. And then I think competitively, it's cool to see golfers come back to the same place. Like, okay, I remember last time I was here, I played it like this, or you know, but the pin position wasn't there when I played it, you know, or something like that. So, and then to see the changes it's made since the last time it was there, like are they extended green or the holes or something like that. So, I like it. Back to my first answer, though. I just like seeing, like, it's the same reason, it's a big reason why I liked watching the Masters, because I get to see Augusta on TV.
And you know every hole.
You know every hole and that familiarity with it. And same thing, Pebble Beach, like, it's probably one of my second favorites, is seeing Pebble Beach and tuning in, able to see that. So, yeah, I'm good with it. Do you?
Yes and no. Yes, because it does bring the familiarity about it, and it does go back to the iconic golf courses. I just hope it doesn't shut out some ones that, you know, even though LA Country Club kind of turned into a bit of a flop last year, mm-hmm. I like the idea. You know, they've gone to Erin Hills here locally, you hope it doesn't take Southern Hills out of the running for a U.S. Open at some point. You know, the competition for those two spots every 5 years is going to be super duper, fierce. You know, I know that. So it's Pinehurst this year, then Oakmont, then Pebble, then it's like Shinnecock Hills. So I can't believe Shinnecock Hills isn't one of these three. But which one do you replace?
Right.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so I hope it does. Or like Wingfoot. Wingfoot's so the next five. Which honestly, if that's the only five courses they played, I would probably be okay with it. If it went Pinehurst, Oakmont, Pebble, Shinnecock, and Wingfoot, and then just go again, I probably wouldn't mind that, really and truly, and let the PGA kind of take you to different places. That probably, honestly, that wouldn't bother me, just because those are the ones, right? But there's some other ones, like I know Marion is on the list coming up here in a few years. There was another Riviera. Is on the list in the early 2030s, so it doesn't bother me. And I actually heard one of the USCGA guys on the Live From show yesterday when I was home for lunch. He was talking about how they can start to build USGA, that is, infrastructure on the golf course itself, from like watering and that kind of thing. And they've already begun to do that at Pinehurst because they know they're coming back every 5 years, and so they can start kind of contributing to things course related, as opposed to just, you know, setting up and breaking down. So that's probably an advantage. And there's no doubt, you're right. One of the major reasons everybody loves the Masters is because it's at Augusta National every single year, and you know every single hole. You remember shots from all these different years, all these different guys,
right,
to these certain hole locations. You know on Sunday, number 16 is going to be in that bowl down there on the back left of the green. If they hit it up there, here it comes. You know that, so that creates the familiarity with maybe some of these U.S. Open golf courses that'll become a little bit more like Augusta. So in that vein, there's no doubt that it's a positive. Pinehurst itself, from all reports, firm and fast, which is exactly how they're going to want it. Pretty fair off the tee. But if you hit it offline, you're going to be in trouble, maybe. I mean, you see, like, it's a bunch of waste area. They kind of restored it to the original Donald Ross design. Back when Payne Stewart won it, it was more tree-lined than it is now. And then since 2014, when Martin Kaymer won, it was just kind of those wasty areas. They've added in, like, gorse bushes, which is something you normally – we talk about for the Open, the British Open.
Yeah.
Those, you know, gnarly bushes that you don't want to hit it in. They started putting some of that into those, incorporating that into the, and it looks natural in those waste areas. So this year, I think there's going to be a little bit of luck involved as far as when you do hit it offline, if you do miss the ample fairways, some people are going to have fine lies. Some people may be in a gorse bush. So there will be a little bit of luck there as far as what lie you draw. But the main part of this golf course, no doubt about it, is the green complexes. They're all kind of upside down, saucer type. There's runoff areas all around them. Places that Justin just sent us a video where one of the caddies drops a ball in the middle of the green and just rolls way off. I mean, and so I think when you start to try to figure out who's going to win this, identify who could be a winner, I think the guys that are more that you have to have a good attitude when you get a bad break, because you are going to get what you perceive as a bad break when you think you hit a good shot and it just rolls down into trouble.
Just shake it off, basically.
That's
just laugh it off.
Just hey, that you know, and you always hear that when we get to the British Open.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I hit it right down the middle and just kept on rolling and rolling and I'm in the wispy stuff. You just have to, you know, you hear guys say that. I think this is sort of that style of a course, or that style of an attitude that they're going to have. It's just, man, that was a good shot. Boy, that's a poor result for as good a shot as that is. Now let's go figure out how to maybe make par but limit the damage to a bogey.
Yeah, it's disheartening. No, you prepare and you put in all that work, and then a shot like that would happen. It is. It's a mental game. That's everybody knows that about golf. You have to be mentally ready.
You're hearing a bunch of guys talk about, and it's not necessarily a shot at Jack necessarily, but you know, last week at the Memorial, with the way that golf course was set up, if you missed the green, it was just kind of hack it and hope.
Mm-hmm.
Here, everything's mown closely. And so you're going to have all kinds of different options of ways to play these shots when you do miss the greens. You know, in 2014, Martin Kaymer, as I mentioned, blew away the field. He won this golf tournament by 8. You know what he did? He putted it from off the green over. He looked like Joe Wynn out there. And I'm serious. Over and over and
over. I'm with
you,
Joe. I'm with you.
Over and over. But it was the right play for him. And you're going to see guys do the same thing this year. You might see, you know, fairway woods or hybrids, or you know, fives and six irons, and then you'll see wedges as well. And so I think the variety of short game shots that you're going to see will be massively different than what you saw last week for sure, and really and truly different than most U.S. Opens. You know, next year at Oakmont, it's going to be more of that Memorial style of golf course where it's, you know, the fairway is going to be way more narrow. You miss the fairways, it's going to be a big, thick rough that you can either hack it out or maybe advance it toward the green. Missing the greens, you're going to have the big, thick stuff. That's not the way it's going to be this time.
I like that. honestly.
I like the options.
I get bored watching when it's driver wedge putt, driver wedge putt. You know, you want a challenge. I want to see these guys challenge, and if you're a person who mimics these guys to try to make your game better, like, well, what would I do in that situation? Well, let's see what he does. Oh, he pulled out his hybrid. Good idea. I don't know.
You know, a guy that seems like it sets up really good for him short game-wise, but he just hasn't been playing very well. But as far as the imagination, is Jordan Spieth. Like, you've seen him play all kinds of different short game shots throughout his career. I just don't know if he's playing well enough, but this is the type of setup. And you are. You're going to – the cool thing about this could be you're going to see in the same group two dudes be almost in the same spot off the green, and you're liable to see completely different plays.
Yeah.
Just depending on what their strengths are or what they trust in their game. One guy might go for the high flop shot or the mid-high spinner. Another one might just roll it on the ground. And that's the beauty, I think, of what Pinehurst, the challenge it's going to present, is being able to see the variety, especially as you get closer to the greens, of shots. And I know they were talking about, even though the fairways are pretty wide, to have the best angle, because of how difficult these complexes of the greens are, not only do you need to hit the fairway on certain holes, but you need to be in a certain side of the fairway. That way the angle to where the pin location is, you can kind of use the undulation to stop it instead of just kind of rolling off the sides or rolling off the front or rolling off the back. So it is wide as far as fairways hit, but I think it narrows in when you think about what angle you need to be at, which, I mean, that's a different level than most of us can do, but that's exactly what they're doing out there.
I got a couple guys, a couple of my buddies that when I golf with them, they're way better than me, but I love watching them because of what you just said. When they have similar shots, I kind of just sit back in the golf cart and go, okay, Trey's going to pull out this club. Okay, he's pulled out that club. What's Derek going to do? And he'll pull out something totally different. It's not the same. That's kind of cool for me just to watch these guys' minds work, who are way better golfers than me. So it's kind of the same vein. Just watch these guys. Okay, what's he going to do versus that guy?
Yeah, and we're going to see it. I don't think there's any doubt about it. We're going to see that not really a chess match between the two, but just learning or figuring out what the strengths are that week with the short games of these guys.
Yeah.
We're getting set up for maybe one of the greatest what-ifs in sports history. You know what I'm talking about?
We're still talking golf here?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to guess somebody paired up with somebody, or I don't know who. What?
If Scottie Scheffler wins, did Detective Gillis cheat us out of a Grand Slam?
That's a great question. I don't know if we can say
it's gonna,
that.
Oh, but it's always going to be the what if, right?
It is.
What if he doesn't get thrown in jail before the round in the PGA?
But what, he came out and he ended up birdied that first hole.
I get it. But still.
It was still with him that entire day, yeah. That's a great question.
If he wins and, we're going to, instead of going in having a month of, oh, my gosh, first off, we never thought we'd see a Tiger Slam. Some guy holding all four trophies at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did. And then we definitely, after Tiger kind of bowed out a little bit, we certainly didn't think we were ever going to see a real Grand Slam. And to think if he wins this one and we get cheated out of a whole month of buildup to the British Open of him winning the first three because Detective Gillis threw him in jail. I've seen so many memes of, like, it's showing like Pinehurst Village Police Department and just having a big screen with Scottie's face on it saying, everybody know who this is. This is Scottie Scheffler. And had like one picture with his beard. He's obviously shaved it off, so now he's got like clean shaven just to make sure we all know who he is.
Have you seen the picture? It was at a neighboring golf course, neighboring Valhalla. And somebody pulled up, and they had like a dummy hanging on to the car and dressed up like with.
I didn't see that.
I sent it to Gabe. I said, if somebody doesn't drive up to the KC Open like this, I'll be disappointed.
That's awesome. All right. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler is the favorite with the way that he's been playing. Who else do you see as kind of the guys that, that maybe could challenge and possibly not really dethrone him because he's not the defending champion when Clark is. But
well, he's the guy you're base chasing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this is going to reflect our picks, but McElroy, I think, is in that conversation. Schauffele, Hideki Matsuyama is in there too. Maybe someone like Wyndham Clark, but those guys I mentioned are, I think, would be the betting favorites anyways.
I tell you who doesn't seem, I'm going to start with who doesn't seem like they're going to be able to do it. Victor Hovland. Well, just listening to him talk, it feels like when I said you need to have good attitudes about bad breaks, it seems like he's already psyched himself out. It really does. Just listening to him yesterday in his pre-tournament news conference, it's like he stopped short of saying, I hate this course, it's unfair, but that's what it felt like he was trying to say. So it's hard for me. You know, Bubba Watson was like this at times. Like, you knew on Tuesday Bubba had zero chance because he already had – he was in his own head to where he didn't like it, so he wasn't going to play well. That's – Victor Hovland reminds me of that right now. Now, Scottie Scheffler obviously is a favorite. Xander Schauffele has had seven straight top 15s in U.S. Opens, and that's a current streak. From 2017 through last year, he has finished in the top 15, seven straight U.S. Opens, obviously coming off of his first major win at the PGA. He's you would certainly think he's going to be around there on the weekend. You mentioned Rory. Rory's made five straight top 10 finishes in the U.S. Open, which came on the heels of three straight missed cuts. He missed the cut in 16, 17, and 18, and now he's had five straight top 10s in the U.S. Open. A lot of people don't remember. He finished second last year. So, obviously, he's there. Cam Smith, I watched him yesterday kind of walk down the fairway with Johnson Wagner, of the Golf Channel during that kind of noon, you know, live from when he's playing a practice round.
Yeah.
He seems to have the right attitude. He said, this place is sick and I love it. Like, you know, like almost like really, really embracing what the challenge of it is. And, you know, it's kind of that sandy type around the greens and everything. It's Australianish. Is that a word? Whatever that is.
Yeah.
I could see Cam Smith faring very well. You know, Brooks Koepka is always a dude in the U.S. Open that you've got to consider, in my mind, just because of how good he is in the majors. You know, the usual suspects in some point, but, you know, that the tee times or the pairings, Scottie, Xander, and Rory, the top three, are in the same pairings or the same group for Friday and Saturday. You hope that goes well. Like, they all kind of play, you know what I'm saying? They all kind of play well. Sometimes this doesn't happen that way, though. Sometimes being in that major marquee pairing or grouping pulls a couple of them down.
Yeah.
Hopefully they all excel. They all play pretty well, and all three of them are somewhere around the lead when we get to Saturday. All right, who are your picks? Top three in order, and then give me a sleeper pick.
All right, I'll go 1-3. Scheffler, obviously one. Number two, McElroy. And I laughed because you said my number three in Hovland. Hovland. I went with him as my number three guy. My dark horse is DeChambeau. I like his attitude has turned around.
You
mentioned the attitude thing. I think he's going to go out there and have some fun and maybe even finish maybe like a top 10 or something. But who knows? So that's who I got.
Yeah, I forgot to ask winning score. We'll do that at the very last. Yeah, DeChambeau, man, if you can – with the goodwill that he started to build up, especially at the PGA, man, it felt like people were really rooting for him. He has completely turned around his persona with the fans. I mean, I think you could almost make the case that he might be the most popular golfer in the world right now.
Yeah.
If you could it like a dream last four pairings on Sunday, if it was some sort of mix of, you know, Scottie, Xander, Rory, Cam, DeChambeau, you know, a couple others in there, that would be really cool.
Yeah,
to see. All right, I've got Scheffler one. It's so boring. I mean, this is literally chalk. Scottie one, Xander two, Rory three. I explained, obviously, Scheffler, you almost have to pick him, but the U.S. Open records of those other two, 7 straight top 15s for Xander, 5 straight top 10s for Rory. Oh, by the way, Rory's not getting divorced anymore.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah. The irreconcilable differences were reconciled. So he's maybe in a better headspace now. Maybe not. Who knows? I picked my sleeper.
She saw how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
Or how much
he
she's
did.
Gonna, or
yeah.
she's going to. How much she's going
to
lose.
It's hard not to pick a Brooks or a DeChambeau just because the world golf rankings are so screwed up. Those guys are down there outside the top 25. But I went with a different guy. A guy that's got, golly, what was it, 2 top 10s in the last 3 U.S. Opens or 2 top 5s? Will Zalatoris. I'm going to take Willie Z as my sleeper
to win
the U.S.
Yeah.
Open. Winning score, just for reference. Now, these first two, it's hard to, because they've changed the course so much, kind of went back to the restoration of the way it was designed originally. I don't know how much difference these first two make, but just for historical reference, Payne Stewart finished 1 under par, the only guy under par in 1999. Michael Campbell won in 2005. He shot even par. He was the only one that finished even or better. Mm. 2014, Martin Kaymer shot 9 under par to win, but second place Ricky Fowler was 1 under. And then that same year, the Women's Open was there. Michelle Wee, the only player under par, she shot 2 under par. Stacey Lewis was even in second place. So with kind of that as a historical backdrop or whatnot, what do you think the winning score is going to be when we come up on Sunday?
Well, everything you've told me, this course is kind of give and take, maybe a little bit more take of a course. With that being said, I think Scheffler's playing so good. Obviously, our pick to win it. I will go, this might be a little bold, but I'll say 5 under.
Man, I just told you in the break, I'm seeing videos of watering greens. And I hope, you know, who was it? It was Wyndham Clark talking about how it was already borderline on Monday. I hope that the USGA doesn't just cower down to these cowards. You're cowards. Just go play the golf course. Quit trying to pamper it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone is so scared to get embarrassed. One of the pros is like, everyone's going to shoot in the 80s this week. Shut up. Not all you got to do is hit in the middle of every green. If you'll just accept. Here's the problem with these guys. They are so used to just getting to fire at every pin, and there being not many consequences of missing. Now when there actually is some consequences of not pulling off the shot, they go cowering down and start whining about how hard the golf course is on Monday. Now, there has been times where the USGA has let it get a little out of hand. I mean, Phil hit a rolling golf ball, for goodness sakes, one time at the US Open. But I hope they don't make this easier than they wanted to. Watering greens on Wednesday would scare me a little bit about predicting carnage. Our man Will's got 10 under as the winning score. God, I hope not.
Whew.
I hope not. He's got he picked exactly what I picked. Scottie, Xander, Rory, but he's got Jordan Spieth as a sleeper, which Jordan Spieth was number 26 in the official world golf ranking.
I almost went with him like, that's such a cop-out because he's right
below number 26. JT was 25 and he was 26. I think the winning score is going to be like, if they would just let it go and just let it be what they want it to be, I could see it not even, like, even. I'm going to say the winning score is 3 under par. I really want to say 1 under par. But I think they're going to ease it up just a little so these guys aren't whining like little children throughout the week.
I think we're going to see an incredible Sunday from the winner, like an incredible round.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So somebody from back in the pack.
Well, just somebody to give me my score. But I think we're going to – it's a round we'll talk about for a while, considering this course is.
I mean, honestly, that number, if it gets – like even could be that incredible round.
Yeah.
When everybody else has fallen back.
I'll go ahead and say, I mean, I've said it, Scheffler, he's the guy. And I think he's the guy we're going to, after this U.S. Open, we're already talking about him as in the same tier with the greats, namely Tiger. I think after this weekend that we're going to have some really serious conversations of how great this guy is.
Yeah, I mean, the run is the run. And, I mean, no one's going to come in here on Monday and go, no, Scottie Scheffler's better than Tiger Woods.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
At all. But the one thing that he's lacking to be in that conversation as generational is, yes, he's won the Masters, what, twice now. But he's got to branch that out.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just win eight Masters.
And this is it.
I mean, you can.
This is an opportunity for him.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
Because he's definitely playing better than everybody else. Hanging out here, finishing up on a Wednesday. The big thank you to our friends at Rother Brothers, Highway 183 north of Clinton. Rother Brothers offers a variety of agricultural and outdoor power equipment that is second to none in all of Oklahoma. Not a friendlier or knowledgeable staff than the one at Rother Brothers. They're happy to find you either the perfect piece of equipment or the parts that you've been looking for. Come check out their products, including Case IH, Polaris, Great Plains, Rhino, Dixie Chopper mowers, Still, commercial and residential tools, Honda and Honda engines, much, 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 much more. Rother Brothers, Highway 183 north of Clinton, or give them a call, 580-323-1981. Jared, sad news before we preview the finals tonight. Sad news out of the NBA this morning. The logo, Jerry West, passes away at the age of 86 years old. I think it can be argued that Jerry West had the longest tenure of influence on the game of NBA basketball than anybody in its history. You think about him as a player in the 60s all the way to the 2010s, mid to late 2010s, architects of some of the Golden State teams. I mean, Kevin Durant himself praised or heaped a lot of the praise on Jerry West for making the decision to leave Oklahoma City and go to Golden State. Just having basketball conversations with him about how much easier it would be for him because of the spacing and all that kind of stuff. Then put together a lot of what's going on with the Clippers right now. I mean, that is an incredible, the length of his career in the NBA, and not only just having that length, but also a big-time influence on the game. I think you can make that argument pretty easily with Jerry West.
Yeah, and you can even go back further to West Virginia and his impact there. He's a legend at West Virginia. So, yeah, he's had an incredibly long, long impact on the league. I mean, to the point he's the dang logo.
He's the logo.
Crying out loud. And it should always be him as the logo, I might add. Yeah, rest in peace, Jerry West.
All right, tonight, game three down in Dallas. Boston leads the series 2-0, looking to hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy for the first time in the Tatum Brown era. To me, I think I've got two main keys / question marks going into this game. One, Porzingis' health. And two, can Kyrie get it going? Now, there's a lot.
I don't know on both counts. I don't know.
There's a lot of numbers going back to that 2016 finals or 2016 finals when Cleveland fell behind Golden State 2-0 and really kind of got pounded in both of those games. The numbers in those two games versus what Kyrie did the rest of the series. I mean, he was just flat out awesome over the last five, shooting it at like a 50% clip. 47% from three, obviously hit the iconic game winner in game seven to allow the Cavs to come back from 3-1 down to win the NBA Finals. So it at least we've seen it happen before in a situation where it felt pretty dire. I mean, I'm sure it even felt worse if we could remember back to that Finals. People probably had a heck of a lot less confidence in the Cavs down 2-0 to the Warriors than even what they have in Dallas versus Boston this year. He's just got to be able to shoot it better. He has been terrible on jump shots, finishing at the rim. He kind of provided a spark, I thought, in the last game that got Dallas back in it, or at least made it competitive down the stretch. I think it's in there. I just don't know how they can unlock it. I think playing faster is part of it. And honestly, to me, playing faster means he has the ball in his hands more than what he has so far.
Yeah, you know, a couple days rest. There's that coming home, kind of hitting the reset button. I think that I think we'll see a little better version than Kyrie than what we have seen. I think we'll see it tonight.
The Porzingis thing is awful scary. They act like this doesn't have anything to do with the calf injury.
I'm reading about it right now. It's just
I can't even pronounce the words. I'd like to tell everybody what it is. I can't pronounce those
medial
words.
Retinal column.
What happened here? Did Joe Biden join the show?
You got ice cream?
Yeah, I think there is some in the freezer.
Anyway, yeah, okay. And he said it's a rare. It's weird.
Here's what it says.
What's crazy is though I read this out, and then at the end it says he'll be determined to be day to day.
No, that's exactly. It's funny because there's two sentences in this paragraph I'm looking at. It says the Celtics announced Tuesday that Porzingis has a torn medial retinaculum, allowing dislocation of the posterior tibialis tendon in his left leg. That sounds like it's going to fall off.
Yeah, we're talking about tendons here.
It sounds like his leg is going to fall off, and then it says, oh, the team says Porzingis' status for the upcoming finals. It will be determined day to day. Like when you read that first sentence, you're like, oh my gosh, he's going to get to play next year?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, day to day.
You ever wonder if we've suffered injuries like this, but we just don't have these medical team like these teams do that can determine exactly what the injury is. Like,
I roll out
of bed, and man, something's wrong with my shoulder. Well, I'd be probably listed as out tonight if I was playing basketball, but I don't have that doctor to tell me what it is.
I could barely walk Sunday. Like, I thought I blew my Achilles out sometime.
Well, maybe you have a torn medial retinaculum. That's unreal.
Will's calling it shin splints.
Yeah, shin splints.
They could have just said that.
Just say shin splints.
Now, wait a minute. Did Will sleep at a Holiday Inn last night? Because I know he's no doctor.
He's the last guy I'd go to.
Ooh, I don't know if I'd go that far. Sorry, Will. That was a little bit below the belt.
Hey, listen, there's a lot of things I'd go to Will about. Medical advice is not one of them. Sorry, Will.
I don't think Jared's sorry. I'm looking right in the eyes. He's not
I'm
sorry.
Smiling ear to ear.
He's not sorry, William. He is not sorry about it. So what are some of the things you would go for advice to Will about?
Well, you know, what to drink with my meal, my golf game maybe, a lot of other things. Does he know how to work on a golf cart? I need my golf cart looked
up. Guaranteed. I do too.
Something's going on there. I don't know, solenoid or something.
I'm in the same place.
Anyways, we're getting off track. But
well, that's okay. It's the end of the show. It's time to get off track. Wow.
So that's the thing. I mean, you got Kyrie on one team that's playing average at best. Can he turn around? And then the health of Porzingis. That's the questions going into tonight.
Well, and the thing about it is we see this every single year in the playoffs, clear through the finals. The role players normally play better on their home floor than they do away. You know, that whoever the heck that PJ Washington guy was against the Thunder hasn't shown back up. Even against Minnesota, he wasn't very good. It hasn't been good yet tonight or in the finals. But those guys are back in the friendly confines of their home gym, American Airlines. You know, a lot of times we see that happen. And I fully, as far as who wins, I fully expect Dallas to win tonight. Get it to 2-1, and then the series hinges on game 4. If Dallas can win that one, now here we go. I would give the Mavs actually a puncher's chance of winning the series. If not, obviously if they don't win tonight, it's historically it'll tell you it's over at some point. But the Porzingis thing, he has always been the key that unlocks everything for Boston. That takes them from, man, Boston's good, to whoa, who's beating them? So even if he's a little bit hobbled, That takes Boston down a rung or two in my mind. Mm-hmm. So that's a big, it was a big storyline going in. Game 1, it looked like, oh, well, he's fine. And now he kind of does something different, and here we go, and see if Kristaps Porzingis can continue to be an effective player for the Boston Celtics. But I think Dallas wins tonight. What do you think?
Well, man, Boston's been so good on the road in these
haven't
playoffs.
Lost.
Yeah, and that's hard for me to go against.
6-0.
I think Boston, I mean, we're going to get a great game. I think edges them out barely.
See, I think
they're not going to be intimidated by this American Airlines crowd.
I think game four is the great game.
The very 100% must win for Dallas.
No, I think Dallas wins tonight, and then I think game four is a great game.
Yeah.
Maybe not. It might be tonight
for both reasons. I mean, if Dallas is trying to stave off elimination and keep this thing going, and Boston trying the pressure of winning the title, and it's on the road. Yeah, and then for what you said,
that's where I want Dallas to win tonight, so that game four, then Boston. You know, those playoff demons that Tatum and Brown have, see if they won't start creeping into their minds.
Oh, yeah.
And watch them have that almost internal struggle of, we've been here before, how do we get over that hump? Because I promise you, if what everybody thought leaving game two, oh, the series is probably over. If Dallas can win both and it heads back to Boston, that crowd and those players are going to get tight really quickly with the way that things have gone in this era of Celtic basketball, especially in the playoffs.
Right. Yep. Give me Boston. They're going to continue to win on the road.
All right. I got the Mavs tonight, and then really think about what will happen in game four. Everybody have a great Wednesday. Be back tomorrow. Don't forget, Picking in the Park tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Ackley Park. It's been the Skinny on Sports right here on the Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.